Hey everybody, what is going on? I hope everyone is doing well, and welcome back once again to a brand new episode of Sweeten Up Podcast, season number 2, episode number 90. I am your host, Jeff Spencer, and I'm coming at you from our new podcast headquarters here in Brookfield, Connecticut. We would like to thank the city of Danbury for having us last year and really look forward to what Brookfield has to offer. As always, thank you so much for taking some time to join me today. I greatly appreciate it, whether you have for an entire season, an entire year, or you are today for the first time. Thank you so much for joining us. However, if you are just joining us for the first time, take a look back at our library of 89 episodes anytime you want, anywhere you listen to your podcasts. As always, if you like what you hear on the podcast today and you want to hear more, please be sure to tell all your friends and subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts so that you never miss a future episode. The podcast is available on all major podcast platforms, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Sweeten Up Podcast. With that being said, my guest on the podcast today is the great and powerful Kimberly Locke. Kimberly Locke is an American singer, songwriter, and television personality. She has recorded in the dance and pop genres and has targeted the adult contemporary radio format. She was the co-host of the daytime talk show Doctor and the Diva, second runner-up on season 2 of American Idol behind Ruben Studdard and Clay Aiken. Her music has been on Billboard's top charts countless times. She's been a guest on Ellen, performed on Ellen, was a guest co-host of The View, and she can be seen on TV today co-hosting infomercials for kitchen appliances with the wonderful Emeril Lagasse. I had a fantastic conversation with Kimberly, talking about her younger days growing up in Tennessee, her audition and rise on season 2 of American Idol, her appearances on TV, what she's been up to with Emeril Lagasse, her upcoming shows, and so much more. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here she is, my friend and an extremely talented individual, the great Kimberly Locke. Joining me on the podcast today via Zoom video conferencing, what an absolute honor and pleasure it is to have this wonderful and incredibly inspiring individual on the other side of my computer screen. In 2003, she was second runner-up on season 2 of American Idol. Her music has been on Billboard's top charts countless times. She's been a guest on Ellen, has performed on Ellen, was a guest co-host of The View, and she could be seen on TV today co-hosting infomercials for kitchen appliances with the wonderful Emeril Lagasse, among so many other things. The great and oh so powerful Kimberly Locke joins us on the show today. And Kimberly, thank you so much for taking some time to chat, and how are you this evening?
I am great. It's so funny listening to you rattle all those things. I went through each one. When you said American Idol, I was like, God, that seems like a lifetime ago.
Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on, and whether it was a lifetime ago or recent, it doesn't matter, because you are so accomplished and you're so incredible with everything you've done. You're total inspiration. So it's so great to have you on the show. And thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. You've told everybody we're on Zoom, so I just have to tell everybody that you have one dimple on the right side. I want to stick my finger in it.
No, it's so funny. When I first met my girlfriend, she's like, "I love your dimples." Like,
it's like right there saying, "Come on, Kimberly, stick your finger right there."
Thank you. So you're making me blush. Thank you.
There you go.
but listen, Kim, quick shout out, of course, like I was saying before, to your assistant, Laura, for fitting, you know, helping fit this in with all everything you're doing. I know you're super busy right now, so super, super appreciative of your time. And yeah, I can't wait to dive into everything you're doing right now. Can't wait to hear all about it and let people know where you're going to be and everything like that. But before we get into that, let's definitely dive in for people who maybe don't know Kimberly Locke. Where are you from? You know, what was your childhood like, your upbringing, things like that? And early on, did you think that you'd be where you are today, or was a different path in your, you know, in your mind around that time?
That's a really great question. And nobody was, you know, people ask that question in different ways, but nobody's ever phrased it quite the way you just did. And the truth is, I kid you not, I believe that I always knew from a very little girl that this would be my path. Of course, I didn't know how it would unfold, but I knew. And the reason I say that very slowly and cautiously, but yet accurately, is because in the fifth grade, I was interviewed by the local newspaper and I said what I wanted to do when I grew up. And I'm actually doing it. And
awesome.
So sometimes I read that article and I'm like, this is not creepy.
I can predict the future.
Right. But, you know, I think it's all a part of my process. And, you know, all of our processes really, you know, as we move throughout this life and this world, I do believe that my fifth grade or sixth grade self taught my 24-year-old self that there's power in the words that we speak over our lives. And it's very impactful and empowering.
Yeah, no, exactly. I completely agree. Completely. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And plus, I mean, you know, growing up in Tennessee, where, you know, the music capital, like that, you know, that must have been something.
Yeah. It's really funny, you know, because when I grew up in a town that was about 45 minutes from Nashville, and then I ended up going to Belmont University. So I lived in Nashville and I got into the music scene. And the music scene was very different than it was now. You know, I remember being one of the few Black female singers in town. I mean, I had, as we said it, as we said back then, I had three gigs, you know, in town, you know, and that, I think that that's kind of unheard of, you know, and they were all different. You know, I was in a top 40 band. We played at this club called Something Live in Printer's Alley. That was fun.
That sounds fun.
And I sang at a restaurant in a beautiful cabaret room. There used to be a restaurant on Second Avenue called Mare Bull, which apparently is French for Mother Bubbles. And they had a beautiful cabaret room. And I started singing with a group of guys who were all professors from Tennessee State University, started singing jazz. And they taught me so much. Like the bass player, or no, the drummer had been on tour with James Brown. So these guys, you know, were accomplished within themselves, you know. And then I sang like neo soul music on West End, you know, which is at a club called Martini's. And, you know, I cut my chops way back then. And I remember saying after I auditioned for American Idol, I remember saying in several interviews that, you know, I've been practicing for this moment my entire life. You know, like this just did not just happen. Like I have been practicing and practicing and practicing. And, you know, when I got there, I felt like I was ready.
Yeah. And what, you know, speaking of American Idol, when they came to town, what made you decide to audition? Just because you knew you were ready, or just because you're like, I got this, I can do this.
I was so resistant to auditioning for American Idol. So what happened was, so in my fifth grade self in this article said, I want to be a singer and a lawyer. So fast forward to, you know, I'm going to college, life is happening, I'm adulting at a faster rate than I want to be adulting. And I realize like, oh my God, I have got to get my shit together, right? I got to do something, right?
Yeah.
And so I was singing, you know, doing my thing around town. I had a full-time job. I was going to school full-time. Like I was busy all the time. Like I would call my girlfriends on like Tuesday night and say, I want to go dancing on Friday night. So get your minds right, because that's the only time you're going to see me, because I got stuff to do. So, you know, I'm in college and I'm going to Belmont University at a music school. I'm not doing any singing at all. And so I start singing in a band, and then fast forward 2 years, I'm like, okay, this is not what I want to be doing for the rest of my life. Like, I want to do this on the next level, or I don't want to do it at all. Right. Mm-hmm. That was I put my foot down. And I was like, okay, now what? And I was like, well, guess you're going to law school, honey. And so I had to, you know, really get serious about school. I wasn't a bad student, but I was an average student, you know? And so I spent the last 2 years of my time at Beaumont University in the library, like living, getting my life together from an academic standpoint so that I could apply to law school. So fast forward to American Idol coming to Nashville on October 30th of 2002. Okay. Oh my God. 20 years ago.
Yep.
And yeah, 20 years ago, I was already accepted into law school, already paid for my first semester, ready to go. And my friends, a couple of my friends were like, oh, you gotta watch this show. And I was like, I don't watch TV. And I was like, you know, Monday night in college was TV night. Like I didn't watch a lot of TV. And so my friends were like, you have to audition for the show. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. Oh my gosh, you should have seen me, Jeff. I was like, I'm not doing this. Like, you don't even know what this show is. Like, I'm not doing this. I'm done, you know? And so the morning of the auditions, I literally laid in my bed staring at the ceiling, like, am I going to this audition? And I'd been watching it on the news. People were laying outside in the cold. It was raining. I was like, nobody does that. Like, I'm not doing that. You know, I was like kicking and screaming, I'm not doing this. And so long story short is I got up at, you know, I probably got out of bed at like 6:30, drove downtown. The auditions were only 2 miles from my condo where I was living. And I got there and I got a number. They gave you a number. They put me in a line and they cut the line off not too long. I think maybe 6 or 7 people got in after me and that was it. And so I auditioned and I went because I was laying in my bed and I said, you know what? What do I have to lose? I've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. And, you know, it's just another audition. I had been on every other audition. So I was like, I'm going to seal this deal. I'm going to put a nail in this coffin by going to this last audition and I'm done. And here we are.
And you know what's so funny is that a few days ago I actually rewatched your audition, and was it like, did it make a set a record for the quickest audition ever? Because you were singing so well, and Simon Cowell was just like, he's like, stop, like, don't need to hear anymore. And I love how he just goes, so Randy, what do you think? And he goes, it's a yes for me, Paula. Oh, it's a yes. And Simon's just like, welcome to Hollywood. See you.
Like, yeah, you know, it's so funny. Television is funny like that, right? Because that day, so I was working and I decided to go on this audition and I called my boss and I said, look, I'm at an audition. I'll be at work. You know, it might be a couple hours late, whatever. I missed like 4 days of work.
Oh man.
I came tiptoeing back into the office, like trying to be quiet. So pretending like, okay, she's not going to hear me. And so I missed 4 days of work for this audition process. And on that last day, which is, I think we were at the Wild Horse Saloon. And I think that day there were maybe like 60 of us left, and it took all day for them to audition us. And so I remember, I want to say I was the last person to go in. So everybody else had gone home. I was there by myself and I came out with the golden ticket. Nobody was there. As a matter of fact, I had left my mom. One of those days, my mom was at my apartment. We were supposed to be painting. And I was like, I'll be back. I was gone like the whole day. She was like, at 8 o'clock, she was like, where are you? I have painted the entire room.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was really a crazy time because nobody knew what American Idol was. You know, when my friends had me watch it with them, we were watching like the finale episodes. And so nobody really knew. So I think season 2 was an extra special season because of that, you know, it was really crazy.
I think season 2 was what really set it off.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, and at the end with you and Ruben and Clay, like, that was incredible. And I think at that point people were like, this is the greatest thing. This is going to be huge.
It was, you know, what was so fun about it is that watching families come together and watch television together. And, you know, I remember I said to one of the producers one day, I was like, oh my gosh, I was like, you guys are bridging the gap between generations with music, right? Because the kids would never be listening to this music. We did a lot of Bee Gees, you know, old Motown, like, you know, it's like they really bridged that gap, that generational gap, reintroducing this music to a new generation again. And, you know, even for me, we did Neil Sedaka Week. I called my mom. I was like, who is this? I don't know any of these songs. And my mom was like, oh my God, I love Neil Sedaka. I was like, I was the last one to pick my song because I was like, I don't know any of these songs. And that's kind of the cool thing about the show is that when they start to pick those, well, back then they did the genres. I don't know if they still do genres or not, but our season, when we had to pick the genres, it was like, you know, it was kind of like the lottery, right? Like if you got the genre that you're familiar with, you're like, oh yeah, I'm good. I got my song. I know what I'm doing, right? But if you got a genre that you just did not know, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, I could totally see that. And, yeah. You know, I'm assuming American Idol must have been extremely grueling to go through the process, you know, elimination after elimination of other people. I mean, what was that? What kind of toll did that take just going through the whole season?
Well, think about it, right? Like it's like, you know, the claw comes down, takes you out of everything that you know and places you on the other side of the country, right? In uncharted, unfamiliar territory. But at the same time, it's everything you've ever wanted that you didn't know, you know, and stuff that you knew and you didn't know, right? So you're completely out of your element. So there's that level of stress that brings, right? You're being shuttled around constantly. You know, you're not driving. You know, I was 24. I was the oldest one. I couldn't have a glass of wine before I went to bed. All of a sudden I was 15 again. Like I actually lost my shit one day. Sorry. Cause I was like, I am an adult. I had a whole tantrum. And I was like, somebody is taking me to get wine now.
Hey, that would be me too. Trust me.
Oh my gosh. And so, you know, with the schedule, the unfamiliar territory, both in the industry and just, you know, geographically, it's a lot, man. And it's almost so much that you just can't slow down enough to enjoy it, you know? So it was a very, very unique situation, to say the least. And I had a blast. You know, I had a blast. I mean, and we worked from 5:30 a.m. sometimes to 2:30 a.m. in the morning. Like that was, I mean, we were busy from the time our eyelids cracked open. We were busy.
Man. Yeah. That sounds like, that reminds me of Jim and Sasha, my friends in Newtown who were on The Voice recently. They were telling me how grueling their schedule was and everything that was going on. I'm like, wow. And you know, in American Idol, that definitely helped spawn The Voice, like, you know, things like American Idol and everything like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
No, I mean, American Idol was so I mean, you couldn't go anywhere and not have someone talk about it. It was huge.
Could you imagine my season trying to walk around with Ruben and Clay? It was a disaster.
Oh, really?
Said to them, I was like, I don't want to go to the mall with you because we can't hide. We can't hide. Where are we hiding? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, Clay, if you put on a hat, people know it's you. Ruben, obviously, we're not hiding you. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. And it really did become a thing where, you know, we could not go out as a group unless it was very planned and very calculated.
Wow.
And it was just, it was so great to see people so engaged and invested, right? Everybody was invested, you know, it was great.
Yeah, no, it was. And, you know, take me to that final episode. What was it like coming in third? What were your initial thoughts? And I don't know, what was that like seeing Ruben win and then Clay, you came third? What was that like for you?
So first of all, I made a bet that Ruben was going to win and I won. So I made that bet. You know what? The great thing about it, Jeff, is that I think that all I ever wanted was to come in the top three. I wanted to be in the top three. So being in the top three, I was like, I did that. And I was like, mission accomplished. You know, when you're standing next to people who are equally as talented, you know, you feel good about where you are. And you're like, anybody could win. It's anybody's game, you know? And I didn't feel bad. You know what I felt sad about was that it was over.
True, yeah.
You know, because I came in third, I didn't go home. You know, I went back to the hotel and then we started getting ready for the finale. So I was a part of the whole thing from beginning to end, you know? And so just really kind of understanding that this bubble is about to burst and it's gonna be over and we are gonna enter another unknown phase of our lives. But this time we're doing it without American Idol, without the protection of American Idol. We're doing it on our own. So I think that was the part that really kind of tripped my mind up.
That's awesome. And speaking of that next phase of your life, I can imagine coming in third on American Idol, things must have changed pretty quickly and getting a, you know, a record deal and things like that and being on, you know, top Billboard charts. And take me to what happened after American Idol and everything that started just coming your way.
Well, the funny thing is like after the show on our season, you know, American Idol has first right of refusal on all the contestants. Right. And so season one, they signed the top five. I don't know if you remember that. They signed the top five contestants. And on our season, they only signed the top two.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, we went on the tour. The tour was bananas. I think we did 50 something dates in 60 days. It was crazy. So we went from grueling schedule to like crushing schedule, right?
Right.
And I just remember being in some of the hotels, like, I couldn't go to my room and then go to the lobby because I would forget my room by the time I got back upstairs. And I remember I was talking to my mom on the phone and I had a whole breakdown in the hallway. She was like, "What's wrong?" I was like, "I can't remember my room number." And I was a mess. She was like, "Well, calm down, go downstairs." I was like, "I just want to go to bed." So, you know, the tour has a whole different groove and rhythm, to it itself. So, you know, we did that. And during the tour, I remember they were probably so sick of me, 19 management, because I was calling. I was like, "You guys know if you're going to sign me, you need to tell me now. Can you just tell me sooner rather than later so I can start looking for, you know, my next deal?" Right. And so I'd already put some feelers out and I got signed by Curb Records in Nashville, which I thought was so funny because I went to Belmont University and I couldn't even get in the talent show there. And I was like, I have literally lived 2 miles from this record label my entire life, you know? And so I got signed to Curb and it was great. You know, we had a lot of success. They took me into the pop direction, which I probably never would have gone into if I had not been with them, but it was great. We had a great time. I had great success. And the great thing about any television experience that you get or exposure that you get, once you get that exposure, you don't know what's behind some of those doors that are going to open up for you. You know, at 24, right after the show, I found myself in Africa traveling with a nonprofit and doing some nonprofit work. And I was like, who am I and where am I and what is happening? Like, it was crazy. Some of the opportunities that I got to enjoy and still, it's still happening. I mean, let's just be honest. It's still happening. It is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. And I know you're super charitable, which is awesome. And what are some things that you're involved with?
You know, gosh, over the years, I've done so many different things. You know, I started out with HIV AIDS work, a lot of pediatric AIDS work, which was really eye-opening for me as a young, sheltered girl coming from Tennessee, where you just really didn't talk about those things. I actually went to Africa with Elizabeth Glazier, Pediatric AIDS. And so that's kind of where I started. I do a lot of, you know, work with the LGBTQA, and now there's other acronyms that I just can't recall right now, but I do a lot of work in that area. And I do, you know, I think children are a big thing for me, but, you know, I consider myself a human rights activist, right? Like, I want to advocate for the underserved. And so those are kind of the organizations that I gravitate towards because, you know, prior, you know, my own childhood, I was a part of that underserved community. And so I get it, you know, and I understand it. So, currently I work with an organization. I'm an ambassador for CARE, and CARE has been around for 75 years. And, you know, they sent the very first CARE package out, you know, 75 years ago, and they're still doing it. And I really enjoy when I'm able to be a part of their events and programs. It really is an amazing, because it is an international program, and just watching the work just sweep across the globe, it's really profound. So, you know, I've done some cancer work, because, you know, both of my parents are cancer survivors. So, and I think that is something that a lot of people, unfortunately, can relate to. So, you know, I do pick and choose because I learned very early on, you can't do them all. But, you know, I do what I can, you know, where I can.
That's incredible. Much, much respect. That's awesome. Anytime you can be a part of something like that and do great things towards other people. I love it. I'm all about that. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah, and it's such a great learning experience, right? When you talk to people, you know, from all various different walks of life, you suddenly realize that we are all way more similar than we are different. Right. Oh, yeah. And we all want, mostly we want the same things in life. And so I think part of my gift is just listening. That's it. You know, because sometimes people don't need, you don't need to fix all the time. You just need to listen. And there's power in that, in listening. And there's also power in being heard. When people feel heard, it changes them.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I'm totally on that same wavelength with you there.
Yeah, that's good.
And, you know, I understand a few years after American Idol in the early 2000s, Ellen DeGeneres took a liking to you and you were on her show a couple times. So I definitely want to ask about that. What was that like, especially in the early days of her show?
Yeah. So, you know, it's really funny. I remember that Ellen appearance and I was doing. I was losing weight on national television.
Yes. That's Celebrity Fit Club. Yes.
Celebrity Fit Club, which seems like another lifetime ago. And, you know, it was one of those things where I just remember Ellen was like, it was, her show was so popular then. And I was nervous actually going on to her show. I mean, I barely remember it. I would have to go back and watch the interview to recall it properly. But I remember walking out, and which seemed like a very long walk to get to the chair I was sitting in, right?
I watched,
like,
it a few days ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just really glad that I wasn't on during the time where she scares people as they're walking out, because the dress I was wearing was not conducive to being scared.
That's awesome. That's hilarious. It's true though. That is a good thing.
So true. But it was really great. I was, you know, I had just done Celebrity Fit Club. I had lost, you know, weight and I was feeling really good. And it was just really cool to be sitting there with Ellen. You know, I was very familiar with Ellen. I knew her and I was a fan. And so it was just, you know, listen, that's the other thing about American Idol, right? Like the people that I got to either sit across from, talk to, have dinner with, you know, I actually became very friendly with Neil Sedaka. Who knew, you know?
Wow,
and, right? It's so funny. He and his wife, Leba, amazing people, just really great people. And, you know, Gladys Knight was on our show and I, you know, went to several of her shows backstage and she's like, "Hey, Kimberly, baby," she had the flu one time. And she was like, "You can come in." I was like, "Honey, I will take your flu, honey. It's okay. I'm okay."
She's the go. I would faint if I saw
her. I know, right? Patti LaBelle. Oh my gosh. I grew up listening to Patti LaBelle, my friends and I, and I remember Patti LaBelle was one of my very first concerts that I went to. I was dating a guy and he gave me 4 tickets to the show for me and my friends. They Good were guy. Grass seats in the way, 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 way back up on the hill. And Miss Pat was like this big, but you would have thought we were in the front row. So you can imagine when I got to do an interview with her, because I was doing some commentary stuff with Extra. I'm sitting across Miss Patti LaBelle, like having my tea. And then we did a show together in Nashville with Winona and Patty. And then Winona and I start to bond because she rides a motorcycle. I ride a motorcycle. She's like, hey, kid, you know, come over sometime. I got a couple extra bikes. I was like, yeah, I'm coming.
You ride a motorcycle? That's dope.
Ew, I do. That's actually one of my... It's, you know, my family, I grew up in a family that rode motorcycles. So, you know, that's just what we do. But I did this, I did a motorcycle ride in Nashville with Winona, Darius Rucker.
Mm-hmm. No way. Darius
Rucker. Yeah. Oh, Darius Rucker. And lovely. He's lovely. She's lovely. And so, and then here's the icing on the cake. Karen Davidson, the granddaughter of Harley Davidson, was leading the pack. And I was like side by side, number 2, number 3 with Winona. And I was like, get out of town, girl. Like,
shut up. Like, oh my
God. These are the kinds of things. Like, these are the moments, right? That you can't plan for. You're like, I'm doing what with who and when?
Wow.
My life, if somebody sat down or if God himself came down and said, Kimberly, write down what you want, I would have missed more than half of it.
Yeah.
Because I just did not have a clue.
Yeah.
I didn't have a clue.
You never know. Wow.
You never know. You never wow. know.
That is so cool. That just like hit me so hard. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
Good stuff. And you know what? I will say this. I did this show in Nashville with Winona and Patti LaBelle. I opened up for them. And they are two women. I'll never forget. I have the best photograph of the three of us. And I'll never forget. I was going through something. I don't remember what it was, but it didn't matter. Miss Pat, she saw it all over my face and she was like, honey, she's like, whatever it is, you got to let it go. She said, you got to let it go.
Man.
And I just, in that moment, I was like, how does she know?
Patti LaBelle's telling me to let it go. Oh my God.
Patti LaBelle, she was mothering me in that moment. Like, and I was like, oh my gosh. And so I've just had I've been really, really blessed, you know, to have some wonderful encounters with, you know, other people, you know, but they're celebrities, but they're people. And that's the beautiful thing about it. You know, we're all people.
Yeah, no, we're all just people striving to survive and get through this life and make an impact.
That's it.
Totally agreed. And, you know, talking about, you know, celebrities and certain things you were able to do, you were also a guest co-host when it was of The View, when it was still called The View. And now it's called The Talk, I think, or something like that.
And no, it's The View. Right? Is the it Talk the is talk? Different.
Oh, that's The Talk is different?
Shows,
okay,
yeah.
Never mind. I get my mixed up there. But you were on, you know, you were on The View early on with Rosie and Joy Behar and everyone. And, you know, what was that like and how did you get that invitation?
So another crazy moment, you know, that was probably like 2007. And the reason I know that is because I had red hair and that red hair was everything. That red hair took on a life of its own. And I was living in New York City. I just released Based on a True Story and I get on the show. Thank you.
Yeah, that's
what. Listen, album. I'm so proud of that album. So proud.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I go on there to promote the album, and Rosie is sitting next to me, and she calls me Kimberly Clark. And I said, and I was like, are you really going to correct Rosie? And I was like, yes, you have to. So this is all like a 3-second conversation in my head. And I was like, Rosie, it's Kimberly Locke. She's like, oh my God, She was like, I'm so sorry.
Rosie's wild. She's wild.
Right. She is. She is wild. But she was very gracious and it was very nice to be on the show, you know, with those ladies. And, you know, I'm just going to throw that out there. But somebody that I would love to meet and like just sit on the floor crisscross and chop it up with is Whoopi Goldberg.
Same.
You know, so I think she is just as salt to the earth and down to earth as you get, man. Like, yeah. That's it. You want to have some real talk. Like, think yeah. She's the person to do it with. So, and she wasn't on the show yet, but I had a great time. You know, listen, The View is a great show. And at that time, it was probably, you know, it had just started probably, or it hadn't been on very long. So it was super popular. And, you know, again, it's just one of those moments when you're just kind of like, wow, this is what's happening right now. Like, this is it. This is awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is really
damn awesome.
That is really awesome. And, you know, what was it like for you, you know, in your mid-20s and, you know, just before you turned 30, because that's kind of when everything like this was happening. And what was that like handling all that fame, you know? You know, American, you know, you're on American Idol, all of a sudden, boom, celebrity, there's fame, there's things involved. How was it like handling that? Or did it sort of come natural?
I spent a lot of time trying to not be a celebrity.
Gotcha.
Like, I really did. Like, and it's a challenge because everybody wants to treat you that way, but I didn't want to be treated that way. I just wanted to be me. You know, I just wanted to hang out and you know, unfortunately I had some people around me that they used to go into restaurants and say, I'm with Kimberly Locke. We need a table. And I wouldn't find out till like after the fact. And I hated that. Like, I don't like that at all. Like, so I spent a lot of time trying to resist that, you know, and now I'm at a place to where I understand that it just comes along with it. And I just have to be me, you know, and I appreciate people who love my music and who love me or, you know, love my work. I appreciate that. But like, you know, I don't want people to ever feel like they have to treat me that way because I'm just not that person. You know, I think that's the part that my fifth grade self missed in this arc, you know, because you don't get to be the artist in the public eye without being a celebrity. They go together. And I never, you know, my fifth grade self didn't really think about that part, you know, and that's not the part that I never spent any time thinking about that part. I just wanted to do what I love to do. And that was sing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, and I know you've done other things on TV besides singing. And two of those were, one was you hosted a game show on the Game Show Network as a co-host, I believe.
Yes.
And you were on Family Feud.
Oh my God. Probably one of my worst moments. I'm not good. I am not good under pressure.
I had to bring it up. I had to bring it up. I had to ask.
What a fun time though. I grew up watching Family Feud, right? And so they had a group of idols. They got some idols together and we did a Family Feud thing and I sucked at it. I mean, I couldn't believe how bad I was.
Is it available to watch somewhere? I feel like maybe YouTube or something. I want to watch it.
You know what the great thing is that when I was on Idol, there was no social media or anything like that. So a lot of this stuff, thankfully for me, is not available to the general public.
right.
But you might be able to find it. I've never watched it, but okay. You're going to laugh. It's going to be great entertainment because I was not good. I wasn't good at all.
Sometimes that's why Family Feud is so great because, you know, of
gosh,
either doing really well or not doing so great. Yeah. That's what's great about it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, I've gotten to do so many things. You brought up the Game Show Network. And I remember when I did that and they did that show in a mall. So that was a crazy time because it was right after Idol and there were people everywhere. And I was like, did you guys really think this one through? Like, how are we going to do this? But that was another really fun, you know, a fun experience. And it's, you know, I think the great thing for me right now where I am is like, hearing as you're bringing up all these things, it brings back so many great memories. And I'm in this place in my life where I'm connecting all the dots of my life. And it's funny how, you know, one thing leads to this project or meeting this person who had nothing to do with the project, but you just happen to be in that place and connecting all of those dots. And I think that really helps me to walk into every situation with a purpose, you know, knowing that even if I don't know what the purpose is, it will reveal itself to me. And I've gotten to do some really cool things.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, I have.
You have. And now that we covered what you've done in the past, speaking of cool things, I'll never forget. I think it was definitely before we started. I started chatting with Laura and I followed you on Instagram, which was last year. But at some point last year, I woke up on a Sunday morning. I came out to my living room and I was getting ready to watch the F1 race, the Formula One race that was going on that day. And I'm flipping through the channels and I see Emeril Lagasse, and he's got a kitchen appliance that he's showcasing. And there was this woman with him. And I'm like, who's this woman? And come to find out, it's Kimberly Locke. And indeed. I thought it was so cool. And I still see you almost every weekend morning on my TV. I'm pretty sure
I saw you
last weekend. My girlfriend was with me and I said, I'm chatting with her next week. And
oh my gosh, that's so great. Oh,
it's great because Emeril, I cannot tell you. Emeril, my dad and I would get together in the living room when I was young and watch Emeril's cooking show on repeat. We loved it. We were obsessed. My dad still, to this day, we love Emeril so much. So many people love Emeril, legend, absolutely beloved. So
absolutely.
How did that come to be where you got to work alongside a legend?
Listen, I pinch myself every time we're on set together because I'm like, oh my gosh, I have my own masterclass here.
And you got to tell me what he's like being with him. Like I couldn't imagine.
He's so great, Jeff. He is funny. He's funny. He's smart.
I love him.
He is nice. He sings. And he loves cooking. Mm. He loves the food. Like it's almost like once he starts cooking, like once we start demoing a dish, it's like nobody exists but him in that dish. It's very interesting. You know, like he is like a singer, the equivalent of a singer, but with food, right? There is something very magical that happens between him and the food because he cares so much about it. Like if we're demoing something and it cooks too long because we're trying to correct something on set, he'll tell us, don't eat that. He's like, I'm going to cook another one. And I'm like, but that one's probably good. And so he cares so much about the food. And, you know, just working with him, it's been such an amazing experience. And again, nothing I planned for. You know, I have my show, What's Cooking with Kimberly. And so I love cooking. And I was doing some work with this company and they paired me up with him and I was like, well, hot diggity dog, who is luckier than me?
Nobody. That's incredible.
And they wouldn't tell me who it was until like I got there. And I was like, you could have given me a hint.
I would have showed up and been like, yo, Emeril, like, whoa.
Oh my gosh. It really has been, I've learned so much, you know, working side by side with him and, you know, what a treat for me of all the things I've already done to be at this point in my career, having this experience, what a treat.
He's looking great too. He looks great. Like absolutely great. And to be honest, it's like a toaster oven combo type of.
I use that thing every day.
It looks amazing. It really looks amazing. Like I watch the show and I'm like, Emeril, I'm sold. I'm like, I'm sold, Emeril and Kim. I'm sold.
I know. People are like, do you really, is the food that good? I was like, honey,
when you got
Emeril cooking for you, the food is that good.
Question the food when I got Emeril.
Oh, please. It's delicious.
That's so cool. Man, that's awesome. I think it's so funny to tune in and see it. It's great. I love it.
It's a good time.
I absolutely love it. And, you know, music wise, you're doing a lot right now. Like I said at the top, you're very busy. You got a lot going on. You're performing here and there. And you came out with a Christmas album recently. Talk to me about that, how that went, you know, the writing, you know, just everything like that, all that fun stuff. And definitely let everyone know what you're doing right now and where you're going to be performing and things like that.
Yeah. You know. So the Christmas album, what a fun project. I worked on it with this band out of Brooklyn called EMP3, Eli, Manny, and Patrick. And they're just really, really cool guys and great musicians. And so I wanted to do a full Christmas album that was traditional, yet not so traditional. And these guys, I think they did that. They were able to ride that with me. And so I picked some songs that were not so obvious on the Christmas album. And I had a lot of fun doing that. I love Christmas. I love Christmas music. I love everything Christmas. Like, I still want to believe in Santa Claus. Like, that's how much I love Christmas. You know, and when I, you know, working on the album, it was just a lot of fun. You know, we started recording that album in July, you know, actually, that's not true. The album was done in July. So we started recording the year before, like January of the previous year. And, you know, having the live musicians in the studio is always a good time. And, you know, I work with my studio husband, JC, and he has a beautiful studio in his home. And so we spent a lot of time together doing that. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I've been signed to a label and here I am doing it on my own. So that's always a good feeling, right? Where you, you know, you kind of step out as your, as an independent and you're like, all right, I'm still going to do this and I'm going to do it, you know, the way I want to do it. And I want to do the songs that I want to do. And that's really what I did. And we did a Kickstarter, so which got all the fans engaged. And, you know, I think our first single did really well for a Christmas song because it's very hard to get added at Christmas because, you know, it's, there's only so many spots and there's a million Christmas songs, let alone a million good Christmas songs, you know? So, luckily, you know, I have a foundation that's of a, I'm already established in the Christmas world from my first Christmas album. I had three number ones off of that album. And so we did really well and I'm really proud of, you know, the final product and what we did. And, you know, so this year we'll probably put out another Christmas single for sure. And then I was just talking to someone today. I was like, you know, I'm thinking about what my next music project's going to be. And, you know, I'm all about not rushing it, letting things just kind of unfold naturally.
Of course.
And I'm doing a lot of performing right now, which is fun. I just did a show down in the city. I performed at Birdland in December. I performed at Green Room 42 this month. I'll be in LA next month. I've got some international trips coming up, you know, so there's a lot of, just a lot of really good stuff. And, you know, I'm saying yes to the things that feel right. And that's the way I'm going. And it all feels very good to me right now.
That's awesome. Yeah. I know you've been performing so much. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but were you recently at the, I think it was last year, the Amber Room, right?
The Amber Room. Yeah.
I'm in the Amber Room right now. So,
yeah. So the last couple of years I've done a show there and it's been during COVID. So it's been tough, you know, as far as like, you know, people wanting to come out and, but we've done those shows and they've been really intimate. And they've been great. So, you know, I don't care how many people are in the room. My show is not going to be any different, you know, whether there's 100 people in the room or 100,000 people in the room, it, you know, it just, I'm going to perform at the same level. And so those shows were really up close and personal and I loved it. I love doing stuff like that actually.
That's awesome. I can't wait to come out to a show.
I'm
trying to get to the Birdland one because I've been there before and I love that place. Cool. That's a great venue.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So I'm definitely looking forward to getting out to a show for sure because
I'll keep you posted.
You're incredible.
Thank you.
You have pipes just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Second to none in my opinion. Just really, really great stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So, you know, if you want to, we've been updating the website with all the stuff that's going on. So my website is KimberlyLock.me. And I have a performance page there, and that's where you can find all the live shows. And if you follow me on social, I have a little, what do you call it? A link tree link. Yes. Yep. I have a little link tree link that we keep that updated as well. So I would love to see you or any of your followers, anybody, you know, out there who wants to come out to a show. I will always come and say hi.
Awesome. Awesome. Definitely. I'm sure a lot of my listeners will come out for sure. And I'm so glad that concerts are coming back with COVID and everything like that.
Me too.
I'm actually going to a concert this weekend at the Wall Street Theater in Norwalk. Never been, but okay. I'm going there because Marty Stewart's going to be there. My dad loves him. I like him too. He's very talented.
That's awesome.
I actually saw Ruben Studdard is out right now. Speaking of, you know, American Idol,
he was just at the Wall Street, I believe.
Yeah.
He is doing a Luther Vandross tour, which I've been to see twice now.
It must be so awesome.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really, really good. Really good.
It's great to see him out doing his thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really is. Because some people are like, whatever happened to Ruben Studdard? I'm like, what do you mean? He's out.
He's around doing his thing. What I love about Ruben is like, Ruben is a true performer. Like that's all he wants to do is be on stage performing. And that's what he does. And I love him for it.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Great, great guy. You know, what do you love the most about what you do? You know, with everything you're doing with performing and making albums and music, what do you love the most?
Oh my gosh, that's a question. What do I love the most? You know, I think right now I am loving singing. You know, I fell out of love with singing for a little while once upon a time because I was going about it the wrong way. I let the business get in the way of my art and my heart. And so now I'm back to that and I love it. I'm singing better than I ever have. And it feels really, really, really good. And, you know, I'm connecting with music in a different way. And I'm sure that has something to do with age and living life and having experiences. And so I'd have to say like, that's my top, but you know what I love to do probably just as much as I love to feed people. I love cooking and I love feeding people and watching people eat. And I like to eat too, but there's nothing more than, you know, getting my group together and just feeding them to their hearts so content. You know, I do love that as well.
Yeah. Talk to me about your cooking show. How is it, you know, when, how did that start and how's it been going and how much fun do you have with that?
So What's Cooking with Kimberly is like my passion project. So I started it back in like 2011 and, you know, I just cook. I try to, you know, always try to take a healthy spin on stuff. Not always, but I try. And then I throw in a few fun things and, you know, it's evolving and growing. And, you know, like I said, it's my passion project. So I don't put a lot of weight on it, because I want to enjoy it. And when I have free time, I want to do it, but it's available on YouTube. And I just keep creating content that's fun and, you know, hopefully helpful to some people. And I do it because I love it. You know, I really love cooking. And, you know, the fact that I'm cooking with Emerald right now is just a plus, you know, and a big bonus because I'm not really actively pursuing that space. So when it drops in your lap like that, you know, I'll take it. I'm good. Like, this is awesome.
That's so great. And I know that recently you got some me time. You were able to take a little trip. It looked like a lot of fun. And tell me, was that like a working / play trip? Or did you go up on stage just to give people a good time? Because I would have been so happy if I was on a cruise or a trip with Kimberly Locke and she just came up on stage and was just like, you know, let's have a good time. Listen to me.
Right.
Oh, my God.
I was actually working. I was hired to do that trip. And it was probably so far to date the trip of a lifetime.
It seemed like it.
Yeah, we were in the Seychelles, which is off of the east coast of Africa, just above Madagascar. And I mean, I fell in love with a tortoise and I saw the most beautiful water I've ever seen, and I snorkeled every day. So there you go. And I did a show and crushed it. So there you go.
It was like, I kissed a tortoise in life.
And I liked it. Yes, that's my new jam. I was like, I'm working on this new song. Let me know what you think.
That's awesome. You know, and I just remember seeing posts from other people that you were sharing, and they're like, Kimberly Locke, you know, from American Idol's up here doing her thing and just making my vacation. You made so many people happy.
Yeah, it was such a fun trip. It was an amazing group of people. The company that I went with, they're amazing. And we just had a really great time. And, you know, that's kind of been my thing this year is like, I want to see the world, you know, who knew that I'd be having a moment with a tortoise. And then we were snorkeling one day and there was a sea turtle, you know, so it's like, come on, like, come on. I want more of this, man. Let's sweeten up this life.
Couldn't agree more. Very well said. Very well said.
Yeah.
Listen, I got two more things before we wrap up. And thank you so much for giving me some of your time. I'm so appreciative. This is great. I love hearing these stories. And one of those is, you know, in your free time, when you get some time to just relax, what do you like to do besides, you know, riding your motorcycle or whatever it is? What do you like to do in your free time?
You know what I really love doing? I love watching Bob's Burger.
It's a pouring great
a glass
show.
Of wine, ordering a pizza.
Good old days, right?
And doing nothing, right? That's what I love. I love doing nothing. And if I can do nothing with my friends, people I love, I'm okay. It's like my favorite pastime is, you know, I actually have some friends I'm very close with, and I will put on my pajamas and go to their house for dinner. Like, no joke. I keep a pair of slippers at their house so that when I get there, I can feel like I'm at home. And that's what I love to do in my downtime. You know, I really do love spending time by myself because it helps. I just love regrouping. Like, I'll put on spa music or meditation music and I'll just be, you know, and
some me time.
My favorite time is me time. I'm just saying.
Honestly, I love some me time. You have a lot in common.
I love it.
That's awesome. That's really, really great. So all you need is a little good old days pizza, some Bob's Burgers, some wine, and
God, that just gave me goosebumps because that is just so what I want.
Shout out to Matt Stanzak, of course, good old days. Tremendous pizza over there in Newtown, Connecticut, so on Main Street. And listen, Kim, thank you so much for giving me some of your free time. Once again, really, really appreciative. And one thing I ask my guests before they leave me, I've done it in season one. I'm still doing it in season two. And that is, you know, in Connecticut, we're known for having some of the best pizza in the country. And, you know, not all my guests have the opportunity to go over to New Haven and try all the pizzas and blah, blah, blah. So this is an open-ended question. But when you, if you are in New Haven, if you've been in New Haven, whatever, because I know you're super busy, what is a place there that you like to get pizza? Because I know they got the Sally Bar, Modern, you know, Frank Pepe's, everything like that. But what are some places you like to get pizza near where you live? And what are some restaurants that you like to go to? Because I'm trying to, you know, maybe branch, you know, just some opinions from my guests to try to help. Because with the pandemic, with local restaurants and everything, I like to just shout them out. So what can you tell us?
Absolutely. So, you know, I used to own a restaurant once upon a time.
Oh, really?
I get it. Yeah. And I love good food. So here we go. All right. So pizza, I mean, you already mentioned good old days pizza. If you want a good old fashioned deep dish square pie, get there early because they don't make many. And once they're gone, they're gone.
They get packed. It's a good time.
Yes. So good old days pizza is probably one of my favorites. And I am a diehard fan of Pepe's. Like, I am, you know, I'm a pizza junkie, right? So I don't discriminate. I don't care if it's a box pizza or a gourmet pizza. I will tell you everything in between. And you know, because I grew up eating box pizza and frozen pizza, so and Domino's and Pizza Hut. So now I've leveled up a lot. But definitely Pepe's. I love Pepe's, and we have a Pepe's in Danbury, and there's Pepe's in Waterbury also. Mm-hmm. And so I would say for pizza, that's that. I will say Marketplace. I enjoy meeting my friends at the bar there at Marketplace. Love the owners of Marketplace and the staff. They're always, always great. And they have a number of locations right now. I will say the Foundry. I think the Foundry, you know,
the new goal.
I have drugged many of my friends from Danbury to the Foundry, you know, and they're like, oh, we'll take a drive. I'm like, yes, we're going to take a drive and we're going to the Foundry. And they have a cute little outdoor spot. That'll be the outside space that's open as well. And what else? I feel like I'm missing something or somebody. Here's one for you. If you're in Danbury, one of my favorite go-to local spots, it's like my living room. Okay.
Yeah.
It's 121 in North Salem.
Which, oh,
so all you have to do is get off of the first exit in New York, not the White Plains exit, and just zip there. It's like 7 minutes from Danbury.
I'm 4 minutes from it.
I
live on the border of New York off exit one. So it's literally almost right behind my apartment building. And I can't tell you how many people tell me get over to 121.
You gotta go there because you know why? Not only are the drinks great, the food is great, but here's a winner. They also have a wood fire oven pizza and they do great pizza. And the bartenders and the staff are amazing. So there you go.
Sold.
There you go.
And you know what? You're just one of many people who have told me how great that place is.
Gotta go. And when you go, say Kimberly sent me.
I will.
And they're like, oh my gosh, Kimberly.
I will.
And you know, one of the things I've learned in my travels, I've spent a lot of this year, the first quarter of this year traveling. And I have to say, you know, I'm not from the Northeast, Connecticut, New York, but when I came here, I felt home and I've been there. I've been in Connecticut since 2000 and I don't know, 7 or 8. And I love it. And during my travels this year, I realize how spoiled we are. So spoiled.
We're really lucky.
Culinary delights that we have, man. Yeah. The rest of the world should want to come to our part of the country and eat, because I've been traveling and I'm telling you, I'm like, I can't live here because there's not good food here. And that's a very real thing. We are so lucky where we live with the family-owned businesses. Speaking of family-owned businesses, go to Katona. If you want to do something on a Saturday, it's like a 15 to 20 minute drive. Go down to Katona, eat at Pepino's, tell Joe Kimberly sent you. Great family spot, great food. Great, just great people.
Love Katona. Yeah.
Katona is super cute. You can spend a little money, have a cocktail, have some lunch, stay for dinner down there. There's a couple of really great restaurants right there in the little village.
Yeah.
We just live in a very great, we live in a wonderful part of the country. And I don't want to talk about the food scene without saying that, because we are representing some culinary dishes in our area and it's really fun.
Yeah, we are extremely, I tell people all the time how lucky we are, not only in Connecticut, but the Westchester County, Hudson
Valley. Yeah, New York, Westchester. Yeah, we're so lucky.
So lucky.
We really are. When I was traveling in January, I called my friends and I was like, you guys don't know how lucky we are. I said, because I have not found a dish that I am raving about and I don't want to eat at another chain. You know, I'm not eating at another chain.
Right.
I won't do it. I said, I'm going to starve until I get back to Connecticut. All right, I'm exaggerating, but
I'm that same energy. I hear you. Right? I hear you completely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, well,
that is great. This conversation was great. You are tremendous. We love you much. Everything that you do, like I said, you're a total inspiration. You know, your whole journey and path should be a total, total inspiration to anyone who's looking to, you know, just get out there and do their thing and do it with vengeance and purpose. And so we thank you so much for coming on the show and providing this positivity that we all need right now in this world. And listen, Kim, I wish you nothing but the best. I cannot wait to come see you at a concert, because I'm going to, because I, you know, I'm starting to get back out there now with everything getting a little bit better. And just onward and upward. Thank you for coming on the show. I would love to chat with you again down the road at some point.
Absolutely. And, absolutely.
Maybe I'll see you at Good Old Days someday.
Listen, if you're ever at Good Old Days or 121, let me know, because there's a possibility that I'm in the neighborhood.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me. Sounds like a plan. Well,
all right.
Thank you so much, Kimberly Locke. And just, you know, real quick before you leave, definitely let all the good people listening where they can find you, social media, website, all that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm on the IG Insta. They're the all gram. The same. I'm on the gram. At Kimberly Locke. And don't forget that I have an extra E in my name. So it's Kimberley. You'll find some other Kimberly Locke, and I'm not responsible for what you see there. Okay. That ain't me. So I'm on all social platforms. I'm on TikTok as well. Cool. And of course, my website is KimberlyLocke.me. So come on over and follow. It's really me. Nobody's running it for me. So check it out.
Yeah, and definitely search Kimberly Locke on Apple Music, Spotify, anywhere you listen to music, YouTube, everything. And Kimberly, thank you so much. Have a great night. Look forward to chatting again soon, and take care.
Thank you.
Huge thanks once again to my guest on the podcast today, the wonderful Kimberly Locke. Thank you so much, Kimberly, for telling your story. Wish you nothing but the best. Look forward to seeing you perform live, grabbing a bite to eat, and as I like to say, onward and upward. Yet again, another episode of Sweeten Up is in the books. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. We would greatly appreciate your feedback. Thank you as always to my best friends, the guys who make it all possible, post-production and music Morgan Lutzi, production and art director Kurt Vinci, editor and writer Nick Passacretta, and a special thanks as always to Devin Cipelli. My guest on the podcast next week is a gentleman taking Connecticut by storm, the great and powerful Pier Luigi Mazzella. Born and raised on the beautiful island of Ischia, Italy, Pier Luigi Mazzella is the founder and owner of Fatto e Mano Bakery. His father is a professional fisherman on the island and showed their family what it really means to buy fresh and local. This passion for high-quality food never left Pier Luigi as he moved through his culinary-based high school and into the professional food industry. He worked his way around Italy in pizzerias, restaurants, and artisanal bakeries before coming to the United States to work in 2017. He then decided to quit his job here in the States to open his own bakery, Fatto e Mano, and well, the rest is history. We covered it all, and believe me when I tell you, you do not want to miss out on this one. But until then, you know the deal. Stay safe, stay healthy, love you all, peace.